stated that Hebrews 10:4 and then Hebrews 10:11 also, it says that the blood of bulls and goats cannot take away sin. So my question would be, what is happening to the sin that is put upon the scapegoat? Or is the sin, or is the Hebrew writer saying that the blood of bulls and goats cannot take away sin permanently?
The scapegoat is a typical picture of what is going to happen. As the writer of Hebrews explains, there was an annual remembrance of sin. It was like it was being rolled forward. We're talking about a section of Hebrews that's quite lengthy, chapters basically 7 through 10. And but the picture of the scapegoat is that the time is coming when sin's going to go into oblivion. And that by the cross of Christ and his atoning sacrifice, of which there are several pictures in the various sacrifices. The Day of Atonement is the central one, and it involves a sin offering and a burnt offering. The one thing I remember I didn't get to was the carrying away of the... you mind if I take my lesson up again? Just for a moment.
It's answering the question.
It's not the answer to the question. Okay. All right. Does that answer your question? Okay. Thank you.
You talked a little bit about the history of the word atonement and the Hebrew and Greek words that are translated into that English word. I wonder if you might touch on the idea of using the word atonement as we understand its usage, for example, in Leviticus 16, and applying that same word, that same concept, in the New Testament. Is atonement an appropriate word to use to describe the sacrifice of Christ, or are there other words that are better because the Hebrew and Greek words that you mentioned seem to be connected to a system that didn't provide the same kind of forgiveness that the sacrifice of Christ provides?
In Romans 5 and verse 11, we find the only occasion where the word atonement is used in the King James, a New King James translation. And not only that, but we also rejoice in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, or the King James translation, through whom we now have received the reconciliation. So King James Version has atonement there. Most of your modern translations will use, as appropriate, depending on the Greek word or the Hebrew word, reconciliation or propitiation. Propitiation, although I didn't have it defined here, basically means to appease, to satisfy, and to it's the gift that makes the peace between parties who are alienated and the guilty party, who, in the scheme of redemption, we have nothing to offer. That had to be offered by Christ, the gift that propitiates the offended party. So there's a whole new study. I mean, you know, Lord willing, yeah.
I have a question real quick, and then we'll go to Alan Bonifay. There was a book written during the Restoration Movement by a man named Hiram Christopher.
The book's called The Remedial System. And he takes a view of the plan of salvation that's built around the idea that sin has two terrible consequences, a death penalty and guilt, and that they're distinct. And even if you died, that wouldn't change your guilt. He says, if you murder someone and they hang you for murder, that doesn't mean that you're no longer guilty of murder. You're still guilty. You've been punished, but you're still guilty. And so he takes this to mean that if both of those issues were not settled in the plan of salvation, people could die when they sinned, but they would still be guilty, and then they would have to suffer in eternity and go to hell. So he uses the Day of Atonement as real basis to say that the death of Christ dealt with both problems. The death penalty for sin was taken care of, and the guilt was
carried away.
So he would explain the Azazel as the carrying away of the guilt. That's a good point.
I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
No, I haven't heard that take on it there, but that's a good point. And that, who's the author?
Hiram Christopher.
Hiram Christopher.
Now, Alan Bonifay.
That was excellent, Smith.
Thank you.
And I don't know that there's a whole lot of difference in what
Christopher was saying and what you had up there, I think Christopher is talking about the guilt being taken away. You were talking about the consequences of the sacrifice. In effect, that's the same thing, really. The effects of the sacrifice is the guilt being removed or forgiveness being granted. Depends on what side of the coin you look at. But anyway, back to this question about Hebrews 10:4 and the blood of bulls and goats cannot take away sin. I do think that a passage that is very helpful about forgiveness of sins in the Old Testament, when you read the book of Leviticus, it says, if he commits such and such a sin and he offers such and such a sacrifice, he will be forgiven. He will be forgiven. He will be forgiven. That's used over and over again. That, of course, in the Septuagint, the same word that we use for forgiven in the New Testament. But in Romans chapter 3, verse 25, it's talking about the redemption that is in Jesus. But now the righteousness of God, apart from the law, is revealed, being witnessed by the law and the prophets, even the righteousness of God, which is through faith in Jesus Christ, on all who believe, for there's no difference, that is, Jew and Gentile. Verse 25 says, whom God set forth, meaning Jesus, to be a propitiation by his blood through faith, to demonstrate his righteousness, because in his forbearance God passed over the sins that were previously committed. This is the only time the Greek word appears here that is translated passed over, and it's the word pretermission, which is taken from the word remission. Remission is forgiveness of sins with a view of something that happened in the past. That's what we receive, is remission of sins with a view to Jesus' sacrifice on the cross. Pretermission is forgiveness of sins with a view to something that's going to happen in the future, which is Jesus' death on the cross. And so God being outside the perspective of time, everything being present with God, man can't look at things that way. That's why the Bible is written with past, present, and future. But God, it's all present. And so when these people offered these sacrifices did not take away sin, although they were the conditions and the command God gave. It was the sacrifice of Jesus that took away their sins, if they offered this sacrifice as they were supposed to. It's similar to looking at baptism. Baptism, being dipped in water, does not take away sin in and of itself. But it's for the remission of sins. That is, it's based upon the sacrifice of Jesus. So pretermission looks forward, remission looks backwards. But both of them look at the sacrifice of Jesus. So it wasn't the blood of bulls and goats that took away the sin per se, although they had to offer that sacrifice with the proper attitude and spirit of worship and service, looking for a coming Messiah.
That's an excellent contribution, Alan. Appreciate that.
I don't know. This might not be on the topic, and that's fine. You know, I thought you had a great presentation, excellent presentation. Why couldn't Barton W. Stone understand this? I mean, he and Campbell argued about this forever, and he couldn't seem to get it. I don't know.
Anyone else? Any questions? Oh,
I just had one. Shahe asked about a different word or something like that. The Old Testament, the blood of animals is repeatedly called the blood of atonement. In the New Testament, don't you think that Jesus' blood is redeeming blood? And they're corresponding. In the Old Testament, they had atonement. In the New Testament, we have redemption. Do you think there's any?
Well, there's
an interesting study would be all the words that are used to talk about atonement, just to use a very general term, but I think communicates with us, though, as we've learned tonight, it's really not maybe an accurate representation of the Old Testament, New Testament idea of propitiation. Redemption involves buying back, ransom, that idea. There are several ways of looking at sin. You can look at it as a disease or as slavery, as guilt before a king. And all of these scenarios are used to illustrate the awfulness of sin and the pardon, the release that God has given us in his system of redemption. So, you know, all these words we find used in both Old and New Testaments, I believe, to speak of this central part of biblical revelation, how God makes sinners clean by the sacrifice of Jesus. Does that answer? Or?
Well, I just wanted to bring it up.
Okay, well, thank you. I'll look into that. That might be something I need to consider more and adapt in this lesson.
Well, maybe give someone time to think of another one. In Leviticus 14, you have the leper cleansing ceremony that's very similar to the Day of Atonement, but it's birds. And maybe you've explained this already when you said that there are many pictures that can be painted of what was happening when Jesus died. But what is the correlation between the leper cleansing ceremony and the Day of Atonement? What are the differences?
Well, I hadn't looked at that leper cleansing ceremony very, very closely. It's been a while since I did an overview of Leviticus, and I probably spent as much time in Hebrews as I did in Leviticus preparing for this. So I can't really maybe address your question specifically right now. Maybe one of these fellows who've been through the study of Leviticus can answer that question for us.
Yeah, not really.
That was a wonderful study, Smith. I appreciated it very much. I wanted to ask you a question about Leviticus 16. You seemed to say that there was a little question about what the reason for the death of the sons of Aaron.
Nadab and Abihu.
Yeah. And they offered profane fire, the scripture says. Mm-hmm. Could that be the reason, verse 12 there, and maybe 13, the reason that it was rejected?
You know, in the past I explained that as they got the fire from someplace other than the altar. Yeah. And I don't know if that's an adequate explanation.
Yeah, that's the idea I had in mind.
Yeah. But it seems to me, based on what's in this chapter, and this is something I kind of earmarked to visit more later, although I don't know if anybody can just absolutely nail. It's clear that Nadab and Abihu, either by arrogance, presumption, or disobedience. What was that?
Drunkenness,
that's another possibility based on what we find there in the chapter 10, where Aaron is given instructions, and I don't grieve for these fellows. And then the next thing that the Lord reveals is, you're to keep yourself from wine. So it could have been that. It could have been they decided to go past the second veil.
It's possible, I presume. But, okay. I have another question. Back to Mr. Brown. The question came up as to what happens to the high priest if he dies in the most holy place. Some have said they got the idea somewhere that they tied a rope to his leg where they could drag him out without having to go.
And other sources, a lot of stuff that has absolutely no mention in Leviticus 16 or anywhere else. For example, just to make sure that the Azazel did not wander back into some community, they would generally take it out. In later times, they would take it out to a cliff someplace in the wilderness and throw it off. So that wasn't part of the directions, but that's what they did to make sure it didn't come back. There were a lot of things like that, yeah. And some of the high priests were aged and infirm. And, you know, Those Jews of long ago, they thought of every contingency and made a rule for everyone, or 10 rules for everyone.
Any other questions? This passage, Okay. Okay, brother, well, why don't you say a few things you want to say?
In Hebrews 13, we have the inspired explanation as to exactly what was signified and what we should take away from the type found when this man has to take the sin offering. You know, they didn't burn that holy, but the parts of the bull and the parts of the goat that were, parts of them were to be taken outside the camp and burned with fire. And so the words of God explain this as well as any human words can. Remember, the writer in Hebrews is telling these brethren, you go back, you leave what you have now in Christ Jesus. You leave a perfect high priest. You leave a perfect prophet and lawgiver. You leave the one who is higher than the angels, who is a son in the Father's house and not a servant like Moses. You leave the better covenant with better promises for one that is lesser and was preparatory. And so after all this, he comes down here to chapter 13, and he says, let's begin reading at verse 10. We have an altar from which those who serve the tabernacle have no right to eat. Now, the tabernacle, obviously the temple is still standing. The writer talks of the temple as the tabernacle because that's the pattern that it was built on. In other words, those Jewish people the people who are faithful to the law of Moses, at this point in time, when Christ has died, the new covenant has been established, the redeemed are part of his church, the church of Christ. Those who are in Judaism have no right to be partakers of the blessings of this new covenant. For the bodies of those animals whose blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest for sin are burned outside the camp. Therefore, Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered outside the gate. There's the picture of the crucifixion there. Therefore, let us go forth to him outside the camp, bearing his reproach. For here we have no continuing city, but we seek the one to come. Forget about Jerusalem. There's a new Jerusalem. There's a city to come that you are to be looking for. And so this admonition, or this passage, helps us to understand what might have been very perplexing, you know, to the ancients as they pondered the whys and the wherefores of much of the ritual that God ordained. And in a sense, they obeyed unquestioningly if they were going to be faithful. But here's the significance. Just like the parts of those sin offerings were taken and burned outside the camp, that was a foreshadowing of Jesus outside the camp, outside the city in this case, when he was actually crucified, suffering. And we are to go forth to him outside the camp, and we suffer the same kind of reproach from those who are continuing in this city of Jerusalem and despising the very sacrifice that God had designed so long before for their redemption. So,
I have a quick question.
Okay, go right ahead.
It says that the priest would put his hands on the head of the goat and confess the sins of the people over the goat. And I've heard people say that in this, he was transferring the sins of the people onto the goat so that the goat would take the sins away. Is that language scriptural? And if so, could you comment a little bit about how that has led people to the ideas of the transference of sin as a part of the atonement that is so much at the heart of Calvinism?
Imputation of righteousness. That's what
you're
talking about.
Making it mean transference instead.
Well, I think in the putting is, I think the idea of putting the hands on the head of the goat, I can't recall a specific statement that transferred the sins. What I think it means is this goat or this sacrifice, when they placed their hands on, whether it was a burnt offering or a sin offering, a trespass offering, this is my substitute. I think that's the right idea of putting the hands on. So this is my substitute.
So it's more sort of ordaining or setting this goat apart.
Yeah, beginning of the chapter of 16, it talks about offering the bull, but then later it talks about killing the bull. The offering is this is the sacrifice. This is the substitute. And then as the ritual unfolded, then the bull was finally killed and its blood was to be making atonement for Aaron specifically. It seems like the way Leviticus 16 is laid out, it's not necessarily a strictly chronological step 1, 2, 3, 4. But when you take it together with the other passages, then they had, we still have kind of questions about how some of that might have been done. But like anything else pertaining to the scriptures, what wasn't specified would be open to their, what was expediency. And there might have been different ways without violating what is actually taught in Leviticus 16, various priests would have executed that office. But getting back to your thought, yeah, I think the putting on the hands is, this is the substitute that is going to take my place.
That's very helpful because I've heard that word transfer used many times in reference to the ceremony. And I've heard Calvinist preachers, they lean on this heavily as evidence that the ancient picture had sins being transferred onto the substitute, and that's the basis of their claim that the sin of Adam is transferred from the human race, the elect, to Jesus when he's on the cross. So if transference isn't even present...
Well, you'll read that in commentaries, but I cannot think or recall of a passage. Maybe someone could help us out, but I don't think you could recall a passage that would teach that explicitly like that. This is a transfer of sin in that way.
Roger Boone and Alan Bob. And then that'll be all.
I appreciate that question, but I'd just like you to read Leviticus 16, 21 and 22 as you're explaining it the way you did, and see how that actually gives it.
Aaron shall lay both his hands on the head of the goat, live goat, confess over it all the iniquities of the children of Israel and all their transgressions concerning all their sins, putting them on the head of the goat, and shall send it away into the wilderness by the hand of a suitable man. The goat shall bear on itself all their iniquities to an uninhabited land, and he shall release the goat in the wilderness. And that is a picture of Christ bearing sin, just like the passage in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 21. But I ask for help in understanding this, and perhaps you've given it, brother. For he made him who knew no sin to be sin for us, that he might become the righteousness, that we might become the righteousness of God in him. There's a bearing away of sin there, and that's clear. And is there anything else?
I don't know.
I'm a mom fan. Shut her down.
I think you need to stick by your guns, Smith. I think both parts of this sacrifice are just what you said. It represents one sacrifice that could not be shown with one goat.
Yeah.
You cannot have one goat die and then have the same goat carry away the sins, the guilt.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two goats, but it's really one sacrifice, two parts
right.
of one sacrifice. And laying on of hands is not for transferring anything. It's for identifying who is being ordained or set apart, or in this case, which goat it is that's carrying away the sins. Even when the apostles laid hands on somebody, it wasn't the laying on of their hands that transferred miraculous power. It was identifying to whom miraculous power was being given by the apostles. But it didn't come. It's not electricity coming through their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Transference is never a translation or rendering of imputation or laying on of hands, either one.
Thank you.
It's identical.
That's a good point. Well, this is the value of our studies. And when we can get together and learn, be taught, and exchange information and views, and we all profit thereby. So I want to thank you all for the contributions you've all made. I've got a couple things to carry away home and do some more study and work on. And very interesting. I appreciate your input.
Thank you, brother.